Welcome to another podcast interview. No fluff, no filler, just the very best interviews, guaranteed to make you money, money, money. Time to plug in. This podcast is sponsored by Melbourne SEO Services, getting you and your business found online. Visit www.melbourneseoservices.com.
Hi guys, David Jennings here from MelbourneSEOServices.com and podcast interviews, and I've got a really excellent interview lined up for you today with a smart marketer, excellent SEO. His name's Rob Burns, and I actually came across him because he's speaking at an event coming up that we're both speaking at. So I started to dig a little bit deeper and do some research, and he's got a really deep and rich marketing background, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to get him online. He's had his own publishing company and tried so many different varied things, everything through to setting up his own hot sauce brand and importing paintings, Elvis paintings, over the border in Mexico or something like that. So he's got this really crazy background, and I think what I like most is marketers who've applied their knowledge to the real world business rather than just learning marketing for the sake of marketing and to sell shovels, I suppose, to the other gold miners. He's actually taking his marketing smarts and applying it to real business. So he's tried lots of different things, and like all good marketers, he's always got his eye open for opportunities, and I think that's probably what led him to SEO. So, and he's been doing it for such a long time now, I thought, get him on the line, let's talk about what's working now, what he's seen's changed, and what he sees coming down the horizon. So firstly, Rob, just like to welcome you to the call.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Perfect. I, as a way to sort of start in, Rob, I don't know if you can just tell us, I think probably the most interesting story that I heard was the way your Elvis paintings little business went. I don't know if you want to just tell us a little bit about how you came across that idea and what you did with that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, I'd grown up in California, and I was a native Californian, and I was living in Florida at the time, through a long turn of events or whatever. And there was a local guy there in St. Petersburg, Florida, who was kind of always doing these art shows and events and things like that. And he decided to do a whole Velvet Elvis gallery showing, you know, extravaganza thing. And in the South, there's not that many, but you know, it's not that common. So it's kind of a unique thing. And I was talking to him, and he's like, yeah, man, I would pay like $75 for every Velvet Elvis painting, or, you know, I think that's what the amount was. And, you know, and I remember growing up in California that you could go across the border and you could buy a Velvet Elvis painting for like, you know, 10 or 12 bucks. So you know, I'm starting to think, I'm like, ah, cool. So my, so he places this big order for all these Velvet Elvis paintings. So my brother and I kind of do a road trip, and we head down back to San Diego, and I knew of a place where they actually did these paintings, and it's really interesting because it's just this big long building, and they have this long easel, and each so what they do is they don't have one person that paints a painting, they just have one person that paints one thing on the painting. So they'll have a guy that'll just paint his ear, and then he push the painting down the easel. And then there's another guy that'll paint the sideburn. And then, you know, there's a lady that paints his hair, and, you know, and then, you know, and it's, so there's all like all these Velvet Elvis and Bob Marley and all these just great, you know, crazy, cheesy, bullet paintings. And so, and when you go, you know, when you go there like directly to them, you could get them for like $5. And so we just loaded up the van, and then we also bought a bunch of, It's kind of a local joke in San Diego, but they have these things called these surf monkeys, and they're piggy banks, and they're usually like a chimpanzee in a one piece bathing suit on a surfboard, holding a Corona bottle, and they're about the cheesiest thing on earth. So we fill up the rest of the van with those, and then headed back, and we just pulled along that side of the road and sold Velvet Elvis paintings and surf monkeys along the way, and actually just made a ton of money, but it was kind of fun. But
love it.
I suppose I could have opportunity. Yeah, I probably could have rolled it into a bigger business, but I just didn't want to be known as the surf monkey guy. So it was more just kind of a fun excuse to have an adventure. So
I think, I mean, as an entrepreneur, that's kind of what you do. You spot these opportunities where you can effectively buy something cheaply and then sell it more expensively. SEO was a little bit like that as well in the early days. The cost it took to get great results was a lot less than the, you know, potential reward that you could get for the business that you applied it to. So I can kind of understand the appeal with SEO. I am curious though, what was it that attracted you to the idea of using search engine optimization?
Yeah, well, honestly, I mean, it's real similar. I mean, if you think about marketing, I mean, basically how do people make money is they have a service that they can get for less, and then they sell it to somebody that wants it or needs it for more. And if you think about SEO, I mean, if somebody has something that they need to be found, and you can drive those eyeballs to them, you know, that'll cost you less than what it'll cost them to, than what you can charge, you know, for that person, you know, to do it for them, then, you know, you're making money. And so really that was the attraction. When I first started, I actually had a hot sauce company, and it was just right after September 11th. And I decided I was going to sell hot sauce online. And what I did is I sold it by the case. And so I started out, I paid a ton of money to people for SEOs. And back then it was just really crazy voodoo witchcraft, and nobody really knew what they were doing, but they just said they did and charged a bunch of money. And so, you know, eventually I just said, screw that. I figured out how to do it myself. And I actually wound up ranking my sites number one for the key phrases, hot sauce, and, you know, a lot of, SEO hot sauce related terms. And, you know, a lot of the competition sites, like I actually beat out Cholula hot sauce for, you know, Cholula hot sauce. So, you know, because they just didn't know. I mean, especially back then. I mean, that was like when we were doing, like, you know, keyword stuffing, you know, one pixel images and, you know, invisible white text and, you know, all that good kind of stuff that, you know, was fun back then. And so really it was just fun for me. And then eventually I sold that hot sauce company, but people knew about, you know, what I had done. And so they just said, hey, can you do that for me? And then that's really kind of where I started off in kind of the SEO career. They just started doing it for other people and wound up ranking some of the most competitive phrases back in the day were buy gold, buy silver. And then I had a internet business and online business, and, you know, some of the most competitive terms. And I really just did those for giggles just to see if I could do them or not. So.
And back in those days, you talked a little bit about some on-page stuff. Were you doing, was it quite automated with the off-page link building stuff, or did you have a team, or were you kind of outsourcing that whole idea of the marketing, like you were saying? You know, you find a way to buy cheap and then you can resell that service. How were you kind of delivering on that?
Yeah, I started off on my own, and I really, I've always kind of been the guy behind the guy. So I've done a lot of stuff for some of the gurus and things like that. But, you know, I was kind of the implementer where I would either do it myself or build a team and then kind of have it done. So in the beginning it was just me, and it was good that it was just me, because that was really more of a learning period. You know, the first 2 or 3 years is, you know, I was just 100%, you know, 24/7, just trying to figure out how SEO worked and how, you know, marketing, online marketing in general worked. And then it just evolved. And then, you know, I just spent the rest of the time, you know, working on taking myself out of the equation and, you know, still having quality. Back then, on page was really a much more important factor than off page. I mean, basically people just did reciprocal links for their off page ranking. And then on page was all the, you know, white text and on white backgrounds and, you know, putting a 1,000 keywords on the bottom of your footer and, you know, things like that. Just stupid stuff, really.
It's funny to watch how quickly the industry has changed. I mean, it felt like for a very long time there, not much happened. And I mean, we kind of knew that some of those techniques probably weren't the right thing to do, but they were working, they were getting great results. Google's guidelines said, hey, you shouldn't be doing this stuff, but that didn't mean it wasn't working. When you sort of started to see things change, like, how long ago was that when you sort of started to recognize, hey, our industry is starting to change here?
I mean, it's always been that. It's always been, you know, SEO is dead. I would probably say from the first year or two I started, people were, oh, it's gonna, you know, everything's changed now. Google's updated their algorithm, and we're screwed. And really, the reason that I decided to kind of change the way I did things was not because I don't think SEO works anymore, because I do, but it was more of a case of, you know, really just how much energy and how much bandwidth and what kind of a practical business model it was, where, you know, before it was just fun, you know, and I would just go and, you know, I'm hyper competitive, so everything was just a challenge for me. And I'd say, I'd pick, you know, the hardest clients and hardest keywords and just go after those and charge a ton of money. And then I really evolved back into doing more things for myself and more of my businesses. And I was like, well, if I do 100% SEO, it's really not sustainable, because things always change, and you build up, you know, you build up all this traffic. And then, you know, because you figured some loophole or way to game the system, and then all of a sudden that gets plugged up, and then, you know, you're back down to zero and you're losing all your money, and then you got to figure out a new thing to do. And so I think SEO, it's still super effective. And I still think that, you know, even if people make that just their thing, that's good. It's just a lot more energy and a lot more bandwidth. But for me, I look at everything as building a business now. So just because it's online doesn't mean I don't look at it like a brick and mortar business. And that's really the approach that I take, because, you know, it needs to last, you know, for 5 years or longer, as opposed to, you know, weeks or months kind of deal. So.
Yeah, we're definitely noticing the cost of SEO going up as a result of a lot of these different changes. I think previously, like you, when a client would come to us, we could say, you know, I think confidently we could guarantee that we'd get them the best return on their money for their marketing dollar. Whereas now SEO doesn't necessarily make sense for every business, because we're seeing the cost of SEO going up. All of these changes and things like that have meant that things have to be more manual, especially if you want them to last. And really, I think that's what everybody wants. You don't want to be building a business that can potentially sort of just crumble. I know we saw some big changes with Penguin and Panda and some of the subsequent updates as well. With the big takeaways there, I don't know, you mentioned kind of one, if there are any big lessons that you kind of picked up as some of these changes happened. One is obviously, hey, you're building for the long term and you need to run this like a real business. Were there any other things that sort of came out from, you know, the after these updates kind of changing the way that you look at business?
I would say, I mean, that's a big part of it is you really need to, because, I mean, I think just internet SEO and internet marketing in general is starting to mature. And, you know, in the early days, it's always kind of a gold rush. There's always, you know, there's guys, you know, selling snake oil, and, you know, in our case, it's, you know, magic bullets and, you know, this one thing that you can do that's going to make you, you know, this, you know, ungodly amount of money just by pushing a button, and, you know, and it's not real. And people are starting to realize that. And so now they're looking at, well, you know, I think you need to, you know, first of all, whatever you're selling online really needs to bring value. And so, I guess Velvet Elvis paintings wouldn't be a good example, because I don't know how much value that brings to the world. So it has to bring value. So you just can't sell kind of, you know, hopes and dreams and that kind of thing. You know, the FTC is just coming down hard on, you know, some of those big guys in the beginning that were just, you know, everybody thought were just, you know, the guru type guys, you know, those guys are just getting, you know, they're getting the stink beat out of them just by the Federal Trade Commission, just, you know, because it's just not real stuff a lot of times. So that and quality and mix things up, because I think diversification is huge. So don't, you know, don't be a one trick pony, and especially with SEO. So, you know, learn your marketing chops, learn your copywriting chops, and really bring something of value, because it all helps. Everything helps everything. I mean, your copywriting helps your, you know, your SEO, and your SEO helps even, you know, your paid media, because, you know, you know, you need, now with, you know, Google so hardcore on their PPC stuff that you really you have to have a pay-per-click compliant page. So, which is actually like a regular page. So if you can design a page that converts, that's SEO friendly, that also has pay-per-click, then you kind of create a perfect storm. So that's the way I look at everything. Is this not just one thing? And a lot of times you can't do everything. So just find the best people that can and bring them in. And that's where I really kind of break everything into modules and compartments. And I have people that I work with that are just really, really good at one thing, like Facebook ads or pay-per-click or even, even on the link development side. I work with some folks that do some really high-end copywriting that gets you into like really, as far as guest posts, making you the authority that way. And I think, as far as link building, that's a really good way. That's what I used to do way back in the day. And now it's almost gone 360 and it's kind of back to doing that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. Do you have a little bit of a process that you go through? So let's say you're launching a new campaign or site or business. You've mentioned a few of the different things and, you want to make sure that you're not a one-trick pony. Looking at some different ways of building links and authority. Do you have a process that you go through, or is it a little bit more of a, hey, it depends on the market and depends on sort of how you're feeling, or what's your thought process when you're launching a business?
Yeah, I really look at the market too. I mean, that's a lot of it. And just seeing, where is the money and, where's the, who is the competition? A big challenge for SEO nowadays is just kind of I call it the Walmartization of search in general. I mean, I don't know if you guys have Walmart. Do you have Walmarts in Australia?
We don't, but I'm familiar with it. Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah, there's like big, Google. Giant, massive, big box stores. And if you've noticed, I mean, now that's who you compete with, those people. You compete with Overstock.com and Walmarts and Amazons and all these huge, and a lot of it, my theory is those people spend a ton of money on paid advertising too. So I think they get the preference. And plus, if you, if you think what is an authority site, I mean, look at Amazon. Amazon's just huge. It's a beast. So, how do you compete with that? And so, I look at the markets, and then I see if there are gaps in the market where you're not going to compete that way right away, and then I also try to leverage all those larger sites, to my advantage, and build Amazon stores, or use YouTube, or use a larger. Are you guys familiar with the term parasite sites?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So I do a lot of parasite stuff where I'll do my own thing, but before my stuff starts to rank, I really start looking at what I can do as far as using parasite sites and building Amazon stores and YouTube channels and things like that.
Just to make sure I have got our matching definitions there, when you say parasite sites, basically like a feeder type site, a site that is almost like a little standalone mini site with the purpose really of trying to help rank that primary site, and also, or do you mean parasite as in it works off the authority of some of the larger sites? So you might build a profile on a Web 2.0 property, and it kind of parasites off that success.
Exactly. Yeah, it's really kind of an inaccurate term, but there's a couple of mastermind groups I'm in, and that's how everybody decided to coin it. Really, you are parasiting off of their domain authority. So, so say you were going to, you had like a supplement, like Marine D3. There's a friend of mine, Ed O'Keefe, has Marine. He does like $35 million a year selling Marine D3, which is like this supplement. So, if you were to try to build a Marine D3 site, it's going to take you a while to rank it. But, if you had an Amazon store, and you name that Amazon store Marine D3, and then, started creating YouTube videos and doing press releases, and it's all built around that, and using that authority of the actual Amazon site, then that Amazon site is going to rank, you could probably rank it in days, compared to, months, or longer, for building something that's a competitive phrase. So that's kind of my definition of a parasite site, and other people might have different ones. But
Yeah, that idea, particularly with some of these larger sites, when you're kind of riding on their coattails of their domain authority, because they've got such a well-rounded link profile, you can do some really aggressive link building to those properties, and it just gets absorbed into the profile, which means you can rank something and use some link building methods that you might not necessarily be comfortable with doing it through to your primary site, but it can work on these larger sites because it's, you know, such a small percentage of that overall link profile. So I know you do a lot of stuff with YouTube and some of the other ways. How are you kind of using video and how that actually plays into your marketing at the moment?
Yeah, well, actually what I'm doing now is about a year ago, I kind of took a step back and because I had a link building service and I was partnering with a bunch of people that you know, they were kind of doing, you know, internet marketing launches and doing some stuff. I was working with, I don't know if you guys know Hollis Carter and Johnny Andrews. They had a Perfect Publishing. It was like a Kindle book publishing thing. And I was doing some stuff with them. And I kind of just looked at and said, you know what? I really want to start building real things that are kind of a real foundation. And I went through a couple months and just looked at, well, what's still really working and what's not. And so, you know, the things that I came up with that are working are, you know, PRs, press releases are to a certain extent, but they really kind of need some help. Videos and social mentions, and I think social mention really is kind of the new, you know, it's the new black as far as like, yeah, I think. And so what I decided to do is actually combine all of those together, and I built a system where it's basically a press release service, but it's a video press release that has an anchor person that we actually have shoot in a virtual news studio, and then we embed those videos, you know, in the press release, and then we also have our own YouTube channel and video channels. So that way, you know, that because most the problem with press releases where you would post them, and because they're news, they're going to fade away because they're supposed to, because it's news. But if you embed them in a video channel, then they stick around. And so, and plus, you know, I'm sure your audience, most people are doing video marketing right now. So they know that, you know, it's super easy to rank, you know, YouTube videos for competitive phrase. And then we actually added a social mention component where we basically had an RSS feed system. So every press release that goes out, then it just goes to a big massive network of, social media sites that, you know, that post, you know, post links back to the press releases and to the videos. And so, I think the question was how was I using video? That's kind of how I'm using those are the three things that I'm using. And I just combined it into one thing. Yeah. And, but I would say, you know, if you're doing marketing, you know, those are the three things that I would suggest that you really start looking into is video, social mentions, and, you know, PR to a certain extent.
Yeah, let's. I'd love to drill down just a little bit on each one of those. Press releases, which we know some of the effectiveness. I mean, they're not as effective as they used to be when using different services like PR Web or Vocus, either or. Services right. like that, particularly, I think Matt Cutts came out a little while ago. I know you need to take everything he says with a grain of salt, but they had called out press releases in particular and said, hey, you need to be no following your press releases. I mean, that in itself is an indication that it's probably working. But how have you sort of seen press releases as a standalone, if we kind of talk about each one standalone, and then we can kind of combine all three together and see how they work together. But yeah, for your press releases, what have you sort of seen there as far as changes?
Yeah, well, yeah, Matt came out with that, and of course, I think then right after he did that, a couple of guys basically ranked that article using only press releases, so which pretty much proved it was wrong. But I think they are looking real hard and heavy on that kind of stuff. And so, you know, with PR, it needs to be something that's newsworthy. I think part of it was just quality because PR, you know, PR Web, you know, and some of the others were basically it was just like an advanced article directory. You know, it wasn't that much different from using articles, and things weren't really news related, or they just weren't well written. And I think the problem with the PR industry in general was the fact that it's almost the same thing where I was talking about SEO, is everybody was a one trick pony, you know, and they would, you know, one company would have, you know, well, the one we were just talking about, basically we uncovered that they had just a massive SPLOG network. I mean, they had like 3,000 sites and they didn't even do it right. They put them all on like the same, like they actually split up onto two different Class C servers for all of these sites, and they were all like on the same IP, so it was so easy to discover. And so Google pulled the plug on that, and so, you know, no more SEO press releases. And and it, you know, all of these PR companies kind of had one thing that was just their specialty. But really, I mean, if you think about, you know, what is PR? What are press releases for? It's to get in front of as many eyeballs as you can, you know. And that's really kind of what Eric Schmidt was talking about, you know. Where he kind of had a quote where he was saying that, essentially, I mean, it used to be media dictated how we absorbed them and how we viewed media. You know, if you think about it, the very first press release, you know, went over a telegraph wire, you know, and it went to, you know, one news guy, and it was talking about a train wreck. And so the first press release was literally a train wreck. And it was just, you know, kind of announcing the thing. So another train went and, you know, run into the wreck. And then that just kind of took off. And so they just started sending these messages to journalists, hoping the news people would, you know, pick up their story and write about them. And then, you know, that evolved into, you know, from newspapers to radio to TV. But newspapers, radio, and TV always say, well, this is how you're going to view me. And then the internet came along, and then social media came along, and just like all these different, you know, modalities within there came along. So people now just, you know, they decide how they're gonna view and absorb their content. I know a lot of people that get all their news from Twitter. I mean, and there's a lot of journalists that get all their news from Twitter. That's how they communicate back and forth. So, you know, if you're not diversified, you're not just spread out across that broad spectrum, then you're really gonna miss out on a lot. And if you really think about it, you know, if you do it right, you know, who cares about Google? Google's just one, you know, just one piece in the puzzle. So that's really where I think everything's going, even SEO. I mean, you know, back in the day, there was, you know, 15 different search engines that we all ranked for, and all of a sudden it consolidated into one. And then, you know, everybody's mindset just focused on Google. I mean, some people still do a little bit of Bing and Yahoo, and if you're in the right markets, it's a smart move. But everybody's focused on Google. But I think, you know, eventually, you know, even Google, it, you know, will be somewhat obsolete just because of the way people absorb their media, that they don't really need, you know. I mean, you think about it, YouTube, I mean, it's owned by Google, but still, YouTube is what, second or third largest search engine? You know, I know between Facebook and YouTube, they go back and forth, but, you know, if you consider them search engines, then, you know, you just really kind of had you have a whole new perspective on how to do things. And so I try and look at that too, because you know, everybody just looks at Google and says, how do you rank in Google? And it's a piece of the puzzle, but it's not the piece of the puzzle anymore, I don't think.
Yeah. You've touched on the idea of social being another piece to this puzzle. And again, it's definitely an interesting one. Google's made a massive push for obviously plus ones, and they really want to get into the social space. And just recently, I think Matt Cutts came out and said, you know, there's the question was whether or not plus ones affect it, rankings. And he said there's no direct relation to plus ones. Now, direct is pretty much a wiggle word. That's him basically saying, you know, I think on the flip side, Moz ran some correlation data to see rankings and what factors correlated well with good rankings, and plus ones. I think links might have been number one, but like plus ones through Google Plus was definitely something that had a very high correlation. So if it's not direct now, I think it will in future be. But I'm interested to get your thoughts on sort of social. You touched on Twitter. How do you kind of see social fitting into this mix as well, from an SEO point of view? I think you even said it's the new link building in your eyes.
Yeah, I remember that SEO. I was just looking at that, and I actually think link building was like number two or number three. And I think Google Plus and actually social mentions actually beat out just traditional link building. If I remember, I could be wrong, but I remember going, what? Seriously? So the thing about social mentions also are it's not just link juice, but I mean, those are eyeballs, you know, and if you have a big enough, social account and you're directing it towards the right people, then, it's huge. A friend of mine, Drew Cannoli, who gets, he's on Facebook, and 2%, he gets, oh my God, what was it? Like 50,000 uniques a day for his, he has like a juicing product. He's actually that, remember the juice man, the old dude with the big giant eyebrows and Ray something or other.
So, not sure.
I don't know if they showed in Australia. Yeah, but he was kind of like an infomercial guy, and he was funny because he basically had like these big giant eyebrow beards, and he would do this whole juicing thing. But Drew's actually taking over for that guy. But 2% of his traffic comes from actually organic search, and the rest comes from things like social media. He just has these massive Facebook accounts and social accounts. And he puts out content that's really super viral and people just love it. And so, and his website's fitlife.tv. So he's a .tv, and so he's probably never gonna rank, which is, again, kind of ridiculous because, he's just putting out massive quality stuff. He's just not doing it in court, he's just not, sniffing Google's butt or whatever. So I think social can be a huge factor. I mean, and again, I think it's a piece of the pie, but it's not the piece of the pie. And that's really kind of where you have to look at it. I mean, if you really want to look at it like running, if you really want to make something big and you really want to run it like a business, then you need to find kind of the best people that are in that arena and then have them do it. Because you can't do everything. And especially nowadays, there's so much to do that it's ridiculous. So find the best people. And put them in place and then build those campaigns and then, build something that's real and has a foundation to it.
Yeah, I think you're right. As far as the game now, to be successful online, you need to hit it from multiple different angles. It's not enough. We saw a lot of people who just built their business on SEO and at least traditional SEO. And then you had some of these recent Google updates, and it was like they built a one-legged table. That leg got knocked out, and then almost overnight, kind of their business just crumbled to bits because they didn't actually really have a business. They just had one form of traffic source.
That's it. It's and I still do all that stuff. I mean, but it's almost more like a hobby for me. I mean, just because it's just. It's always been fun, but I'm not gonna base my my living and my retirement on it because I'm gonna be picking burritos out of a trash can under a bridge if I do, I still do all those things and still try to use them as long as it doesn't but also if you're really serious about building a business then you really need to focus on broadening your spectrum and doing things right and making something that's quality. That's the way I look at it. I mean, there's still guys that do all that crazy stuff and they make a lot of money, but I'll bet you 5-10 years from now they'll be doing something else and they probably won't even be internet related. So.
Yeah. The other one that you mentioned, which is almost like another piece to that puzzle then, is the video marketing as well, which, I mean, I'm big fan of video marketing, and you talked about this idea that you'll run a press release and the press release can slip away from its rankings, whereas a YouTube video can stick around, especially if you do some linking to it. This sounds like it's your the trifecta here. We've got the social, the press releases, and the video. What sort of things do people need to think about when video is involved?
Yeah, with video, just kind of like a basic SEO, video SEO thing I would do is I'd keep it pretty simple. And I'm sure this is probably most stuff everybody knows, but so you want to embed whatever your transcript is inside of the video. So like in the closed caption section, because that's a big ranking factor that, and not a lot of folks know about that. And then also, you know, embed whatever your transcript or your content into the description section, and always kind of put your link to your site on the very top. And not necessary for SEO purposes, but just to drive, you know, because you want them to take action. So you know, if you want that video to convert, then you want to, you know, the first thing you want them to have is that link to their site. I would say no robo anything, just because it's a good way to get your, you know, do a lot of work and spend a lot of time and money and then get your channel banned. So, you know, like, you know, all the tube moguls and all that kind of, or not tube moguls, you know, just robo tube likes and views and things like that just really can get you in trouble if you don't do it right, or if you don't know what you're doing. So I, you know, if you're just starting out, I kind of stay away from that. And, you know, but that's a good way where if you do have, you know, very large social profiles, you can drive them to your videos so you can get views and likes that way. And then, you know, start off doing light link building and just, you know, I would say usually what I do is kind of start just kind of a real light mini link building campaign, and I ramp it up about 10% a week and just keep going that way until I start to see movement. And then I just kind of hold it for a little bit and see how far it moves, and then start adding, you know, doing 10% a week again. And it's just kind of the way I do things. And it seems to work out pretty well.
I think the link building, and I think what I like, the way that you kind of rolled together these three into a particular service. I did a video on my wedding, actually, only a few months ago. I did a surprise song, and I sung an Adam Sandler Grow Old With You song, which is from the Wedding Singer. And I posted it to YouTube, and then I did a press release to it. And now if you search Adam Sandler Grow Old With You on YouTube, if you look at all of the other videos at the moment, it bounces between position 3 and position 4. All of the other videos have millions and millions and millions of views. Whereas just by using the press release strategy, because you're basically building links to that video, it ranks very well. And then it's getting at least sort of between 50 and 80 unique views a day for that song, and we're in position sort of 3 and 4. Now, I haven't come around to a way to figure out how to monetize that, but it kind of made me realize the power of using video with press releases. So how have you kind of combined all of these together?
Yeah, and that's actually kind of a good tactic you can use is, so, you know, if you have a video, especially with mine, because I already have videos embedded, so you could do a press release, and then your next press release, you know, say if you have a series, or if you have just like kind of a different, like a product line, then your next press release, you can actually, you know, add a link to your previous, you know, to that, you know, previous YouTube video. And so you kind of do that. So then you use that press release to kind of drive traffic and eyeballs and links to the previous press release video. And you can kind of just keep doing that also. And that works out really well because, you know, then it helps drive the views, and it also helps build backlinks to that YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know if I explained that right. Or
yeah,
right.
No. I think it does. I mean, the real key is it's having this strategy that hits, you know, more than one particular area, and you've got a few pieces to the puzzle. I think that's where a lot of people do go wrong with SEO. They kind of maybe learn something about SEO, and then they think, oh, this is it. I've found the answer. I just need to choose a keyword and make sure I've put it 3 times in the title tag and 5 times in the description and stuck in some of these old thinking ways. Are there any other ways that you see people going wrong with their SEO as far as, you know, maybe?
Yeah. And I'm pretty contrarian that I guess maybe the mainstream in some things where, I think as far as if you're, you know, looking just at Google, trying to rank for Google stuff, that their LSI is so good that, you know, even worrying about keywords is not that big you know, is probably a mistake, where it's super easy to get a penalized for or just you know, having kind of an over anchor text penalty is where most people go wrong, you know. And also just worrying about embedding the keywords too much. I think if you write in natural language and you write high quality stuff, that Google is so good at discerning that stuff now that you really don't even have to worry about like embedding keywords or adding keywords, because Google knows that like this word or this phrase really relates to this. And we've proven that where we've ranked, you know, we've used no word, like we've used articles and content that didn't have that keyword in it at all, but it had related subject matter, and it would relate for the keyword that we were looking for just to test it out. So a big mistake I think people is they overstuff keywords, and they overthink, you know, their keyword stuffing, whereas they should focus more on the subject matter. We also tested out, and this is something most people just don't believe, but we've actually ranked sites with 100% no follow links. And so I think, you know, people freaking out about
happy with that one. She's been saying,
yeah, for a long time. Well, actually Dory and I, that's how I got started, was, I'm in a mastermind group with Dory, and, you know, we were arguing back and forth about it, and Dory and I were like, well, let's just test it out. And Dory just set up, you know, this whole campaign and tested it out, and it works, and it works great. So I don't even worry about follow and no follow links. With my press release system right now, they're do follow links. I think I'm going to make them all so they default as no follow links, but you can hit a button if you want them to be do follow links and do it that way. And then the other thing is I've seen this, and this is really with Panda and Penguin, is over anchor text penalties. And I know that for a fact. Like my wife, who is, she's a professional organizer. She's been on national TV and Good Morning America and all this good kind of stuff. And she has about an 8-year-old website. And she used to rank number one for the key, that term, professional organizer. And then all of a sudden, boom, she just went off the map, like for a lot of stuff. And the stuff we started looking at that she went off the map for were the things that, you know, had 8 years worth of anchor text, you know, links built, you know, pointing to her site, you know, primarily professional organizer and home organizer and image consultant. Those, you know, those things, you know, we used to just rank standing on her head, and now that, you know, she's not even, you know, indexed for that kind of stuff anymore. And so, what we started doing is just started building more naked links, meaning just the URL without anchor text, and we're starting to see those results slowly coming back. I mean, at least she's on the map now. But, you know, I have 8 years worth of link building to kind of, you know, go over. You know, I guess I could kind of do the disavow stuff, but I really kind of stay away from that, because to me it's kind of like an admission of guilt. And, you know, it's kind of like Google bribing you to admit you did a crime kind of thing. So I'm just – so our efforts now are just to build more links that are just naked links that – so until that ratio of over anchor text, you know, goes away. But I would say it's still kind of an old school thing that people do wrong, that they just do too much. I honestly think you can rank with just naked links. So you don't even need anchor text, because Google knows what the page is about. They know what the subject matter is about. And so, you know, I think a no follow naked link is more valuable than a do follow anchor text link. And
there we go. That's most people, like a quote. That's a Rob Burns quote.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. And most people are like, well, I'm not buying your stuff because you're a moron. But honestly, we've just tested it over and over, and it works. It works. So,
yeah.
But I still let people do, you know, if I don't really do much client work anymore, but when I do, if that's what they want, I mean, I'll tell them first and say, this is what I think. And then they'll be like, well, oh, no. And then I'll do their thing and take your money. So
it's definitely funny when you do some analysis on, I mean, you used to analyze the top 10 results and look at how old the domain name was, how many backlinks they've got, and you look at some of these key factors to go, oh, you know, what is the likelihood of me really ranking in this space? But sometimes now you just see websites and you're just like, why is this ranking by rights and by metrics? It shouldn't be. So something's definitely sort of up. And I think the importance of making sure that you don't trip Google's filters when it comes to doing things that are, you know, quote, unnatural, unquote. You want to try and make sure that you are building links with URLs with varied text, like click here and find out more. You want to make sure you've got a combination of follows and no follows. You're using social media, you're using video. It's kind of all of these things combined roll together and also help you build a business that's not just single source dependent, because once you start to add into mix social and video, then sure, it'll help you with your SEO, but also it gives you another source of traffic. So should you come under fire from Google, it's not, you know, game over for you.
Yeah. And another theory I have too, that is, you know, I don't know a lot of folks that are doing it, but I think that it anchor text from you know, higher PR authority sites are good, but sites that, you know, are not, you know, higher high traffic, you know, high PR sites, that you should probably get more of those, more naked links from those sites. And the reason is because if you think about it, you know, what is natural, you know, mom and pops aren't necessarily that technically savvy. And so if they're going to like refer somebody to another site or say another site's interesting, a lot of times they're just going to paste a link in there because they don't even know how to do anchor text. I mean, we all assume that everybody knows how to do that kind of stuff. So, you know, some of the smaller mom and pop type sites, you know, that's what they're going to do. So that's what appears to be more natural, where some of the bigger, more sophisticated sites that are high PR, that are, you know, web savvy, you know, they're going to use anchor text. So I recommend doing that too. Whereas if you do have, you know, go after anchor text, make sure it's, you know, get a couple big money, you know, keywords, you know, from the big money sites, and then the rest, you know, kind of fill in with the smaller sites. Because that's really how people do things, and so it appears a lot more natural. Doesn't set up the, you know, the triggers.
Yeah, no, I really like that idea. It sounds like, I mean, you're kind of spotting where the future of Google's headed and search, and you touched on a few different points as far as, you know, will search as we know it be irrelevant further down the track? We're talking about this idea of, you know, really going natural. Are there any other things that you can kind of spot on the horizon that you think from an SEO point of view where you see the future of search going?
I think it's going more social too. I mean, even Google, you know, with Google just, and that's another thing too, when we were talking about parasite sites, Google Plus sites rank really well. And another thing that you can do is if you guys are marketers or have a tribe, our Google Hangouts, because you can do a Google Hangout and, you know, that basically instantly converts into a YouTube video, and those things rank really well also. So, because Google just wants that stuff to work. They're terrified from all these social sites like Facebook, and, you know, Facebook's just eating their lunch right now on that front. So they want their social stuff to rank really well. And I think eventually Google's going to, you know, it'll be a social search site. So, you know, for the interim, for the next year or so, if talking about ranking on parasite stuff, then, you know, I would look at Google Plus also, because like we embed all our press releases and videos, you know, on our Google Plus too, and we get a lot of traction and a lot of just traffic from doing that. So that's another way. So I'd say social search, if that makes sense, is I'd say it's the kind of direction that I think things are going.
You mentioned as far as what you do with your press releases, and maybe in the tail end, if you can give us a little bit of an idea. I mean, your company's PRReach.com, and you do press releases, and you got video press, you know, videos embedded. Maybe you can sort of tell us a little bit about what you guys do.
Yeah. So essentially, you send us a press release, and we're actually working on having press release writers, because I think that's a big pain point for most folks, is they just don't want to write the press release. And so we're going to offer that service also. But and we do things a little bit differently, because we actually have two sections. So we have a section where it goes out through normal syndication, like it would with, you know, PR Web or whatever, you know, to basically news sites, you know, like Boston Globe and things like that, like CNN. But then we also have a separate section where you can basically give us kind of an extended summary that is in more natural language, because it just sounded really weird when we had our anchor person. She would read off, you know, a press release, and it just sounded unnatural. So now it's written in a bit more natural language, and it's basically a summary. So you can add that on there too. And then so basically sounds like you're looking at my
Yeah, I just pulled up the page. Spotted it.
Sorry about that. So you can do that. So then we take that transcript, and then we actually have our anchor person read it, and then we make a video, and we have like a little virtual newsroom. It looks like, you know, like $1 million. You know, we've got like TV monitors in the back, and so it's kind of like a virtual newsroom. So, you know, a cool thing about that too is it pre-vets you. Like most press release companies, you know, it's people talking about their own stuff, but now you have a video, you know, of somebody that's kind of an authority that is talking about you. So you get pre-vetted. So that's a bit of an advantage, you know, over some of the other PR companies too. So then so once that gets posted, that goes out through normal syndication. And then we also, we have kind of a news network that's, that actually we work with Dory. It's just basically a huge network of news sites that actually take that video and embed them on the news sites. So that way you get, you know, embedding is a huge, you know, video embeds is a huge ranking factor. So those videos are automatically embedded. And then, we post those, you know, on the YouTube channel and all these other video channels so that they rank. And then we basically develop a system, you know, through an RSS feed that feeds out to all these other social media sites, and then post our press release on the social media sites. And we actually post the release on our Google Plus channels, and, you know, Twitter, and we have like a 30,000-40,000 person Twitter following, and we try to find as many like journalists and news related folks that we can add to that channel too, so that way that, you know, if they follow the news via Twitter, then they pick it up that way. And then, you know, all the other social sites and Web 2.0 sites like Reddit and Dig and StumbleUpon and Pinterest is great. That's another social, Pinterest is kind of like a hybrid, where it's a, you know, it's kind of a Web 2.0 social, you know, viral type site. So it's, but you can get a lot of traffic coming from Pinterest doing some marketing. And I think it's still, it used to be like if you had a link on Pinterest that it was a no follow, but if you put a link in the description of Pinterest, it's like a PR6 link. So I don't know if that's still good or not, but that's kind of a cool little freebie PR6 link tip.
Very cool. So PRReach.com is the place to go. You guys will help syndicate out press releases, turn them into videos, push them through your networks, which are both sort of social, and you've got your own sort of news sites, and then you can push out to other people's news sites as well. So it's a big big network and ways to try and help get more eyeballs to press releases, which I think is good. I know we chatted just briefly before the call, and you mentioned about putting together something special for anyone who's sort of listening to the podcast.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I should have just had you describe it, because I think you did a better job than I did. So I do it so much, I just ramble about it, because it's like, you know, like you're just so close to it that you just don't. But yeah, that's actually a great description. So So for you guys, anybody that we have, basically, I think it's $2.97 a month now, and you get four press releases a month. And so anybody that joins, if you just send us an email, you know, and mention this podcast, we'll actually write your first press release for you for free. So that way, it kind of saves the hassle of you know, having to do the first one. Cause it seems like for most people, the getting that first press release out is the hardest thing. So we'll just write it for you for free. So
very cool. Appreciate the offer. Thank you for that. So if you want to find out more about that, you can head over to PRReach.com. Rob, the best place to go if people want to, you know, keep an eye on what you're up to. I know you've got robburnsbrain.com. I'm not too sure how active you are on there, but where is that the best place to keep an eye on what you're up to?
It's been a while, you know, or Facebook. Actually, we just go Rob Burns on Facebook. That's usually where I'll kind of post whatever shenanigans I've been up to. So,
very good.
I would say probably there. I haven't done much on Rob Burns' brain in quite a while. So,
yeah. All right, we'll check him out on Facebook. So maybe we'll wrap up there, Rob. You've been sort of really generous with your time and also knowledge. So much appreciated, and look forward to catching you over in Sacramento for Dory's event.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be fun.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
You've just listened to another podcast interview. For more smart marketing ideas, visit www.melbourneseoservices.com. Disconnecting you in 3, 2, 1. All right.